Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are taking on a topic that promises, well, a literal blueprint for life. We're not just talking philosophy here. We're talking about a precise, actionable roadmap.
That's right. And it's a very specific one. We're looking at two key sources today, Roadmap to Awakening and The Ultimate Guide to Self-Mastery.
And what's so fascinating is that they both converge on this single, incredibly structured system. It's so structured, in fact, that you can actually lay it out with a set of numbers.
Yeah, the 322377 outline, it sounds, I don't know, almost like a technical manual.
It really does. And that's our mission for this deep dive, to unpack that formula for you. It covers everything from the ground up, from the basic structure of human experience to the daily pitfalls you need to avoid.
And the mission statement from the sources themselves is, it's pretty bold. It's about freeing hearts to live in harmony with the source of life, man, and nature by aligning the mind, body, and soul to the original design.
Original design. I like that.
Yeah.
It suggests we come with instructions and maybe we just lost the manual.
Or that we're operating outside of the manufacturer's specs, you know? So this is about getting back to that. The numbers are the guide.
Okay, so let's lay it out for everyone. The three is the tiers of the human experience.
Then you have the two directional goals and two influential forces.
Followed by the three phases of restoration. This is the actual how-to of the change.
Right. And then to maintain it, you have the seven R's of stability, which is the daily work.
And finally, the warnings, the seven destructive landmines of life. It's a complete system.
It really is. And like any good blueprint, you have to start with the foundation. If you get the basic structure wrong, nothing else you build on top of it will stand.
So let's start there with the foundational structure. The three tiers of our experience.
The three-tiered human experience. This is absolutely the key to the whole thing. The sources are insistent on this. You have the body, mind, and soul.
And crucially, they say these three tiers exist within something bigger, right?
Exactly. They are all nested inside this ultimate context, which they call the source of life.
Okay, let's break that down tier by tier. Let's start with tier one, the body way, the physical dimension. This is where most people live their lives.
It is. And the language the sources use is really interesting. It's very mechanical. They call it the biological machinery.
Machinery.
Yeah, like a bulldozer or an excavator. It's a tool, a very powerful, very sophisticated tool designed to interact with the physical world, but it's still just a tool.
So all the things we do, our jobs, our finances, our relationships,
yeah,
that's the body at work. It's the vehicle.
It's the vehicle. And it's what generates all the physical feelings, pain, pleasure, hot, cold. It's the interface.
But here's the part that I think will surprise a lot of people. The blueprint says this tier, the one we focus on so much, it's actually the weakest.
The least and weakest tier of the whole structure. That's the explicit language.
Wow.
Yeah. It's the part most susceptible to, well, everything. Damage, decay, external influence. So if your whole sense of self, your whole search for meaning is based in the physical.
You're building on the shakiest ground possible.
That's what the blueprint suggests. It completely flips our modern priorities on their head, doesn't it? All the focus on appearance, fitness, material gain.
It's like trying to fix a computer software virus by polishing the case.
That's a perfect analogy. You're working on the wrong level of the system, which of course brings us to the next level up, tier two, the mind, the mental dimension.
So if the body is the bulldozer,
the mind is the operator. It's the operating system. It's the control center that acts as the bridge, the liaison between the physical machinery and, well, the CEO.
And this tier has two parts, right? The conscious and the subconscious.
Exactly. The conscious mind is what you're using right now. It's intentional. It's where you have ideas, creativity, perception. But the subconscious, that's where things get really interesting.
That's the autopilot.
That's the autopilot. It's running all the habitual autonomic systems. And this isn't just, breathing and your heart beating. This is where your emotions live, your non-physical feelings.
Like happiness, sadness, grief, love. Those aren't physical sensations. They're generated by the mind.
Correct. And here's the crucial piece of the puzzle from the sources. They argue that our thoughts and behaviors, after enough repetition, become subconscious. They move from being an intentional choice to being an automatic program.
A habit.
A deeply ingrained habit. And the source of these habits, this programming, this is the shocker. They say most of our core mental paradigms were installed by the time we were 7 years old.
Seven. Why so specific?
Because up to that point, the mind is like a sponge. It's in a state of high receptivity. You're not really filtering information critically. You're just observing your environment, your parents, your family, and downloading their entire operating system.
You're learning how to react, what to believe, what's safe, what's dangerous, all just by watching.
Exactly. You're learning your emotional set points. And this leads to that really powerful reinterpretation of a common phrase. You know, when people say, oh, I can't help it. I was just born this way.
Yeah, of course. It's a way of saying, this is just who I am.
Right. But the sources suggest a different translation. They say what that person is really saying is, I don't know how to help it because I was programmed to react this way.
That is a massive shift in perspective.
It's huge. Because I was born this way is a fixed state. It's a life sentence. But I was programmed this way.
That means you can be reprogrammed. The software can be updated.
More than possible. With the right information and, critically, the right action. The mind is powerful. But it's still just the operator. It's not the ultimate authority.
Which means we have to go one level higher, tier three. The soul. The spiritual dimension.
Now we get to the core. The soul in this blueprint is who you are at your innermost being. And its job, its original design, is to be in command.
So body is the machine, mind is the operator, and the soul is the CEO. It sets the direction.
It's the CEO, the designer, the one holding the original blueprint. And it connects to something outside the system. The sources call it the outside connection to the source of all living things.
That sounds a little abstract. How does that connection actually work? How do we experience it?
Well, it doesn't operate on the level of human reasoning. It manifests as intuition, insight. Those flashes of revelation or epiphanies you get.
The aha moment.
Exactly. The sources have a great phrase for it. Downloading into your mind things that weren't there to begin with. Some people call it a sixth sense or the superconscious. It's the guidance system.
And then that guidance system comes with a built-in compass, right?
Yeah.
The conscience.
Yes. The conscience is the voice of the soul. It's what provides that innate sense of distinction between right and wrong, good and evil, positive and negative. It's the faculty of discernment.
So let me see if I've got the command structure right. In a perfectly aligned system,
go on.
The soul receives guidance. The mind takes that guidance and creates a plan. And the body executes that plan in the physical world.
You've got it. That is the original design. And almost all human suffering, according to this framework, comes from a violation of that hierarchy.
When the operator, the mind, decides it knows better than the CEO.
Or when the machine, the body, with its cravings and physical demands, hijacks the whole operation, the soul says, this path leads to life. But the mind, running its old, fearful programming, says, no, that's too scary. Let's stick with what's comfortable. And the body just follows orders.
That's a perfect example of misalignment. The CEO's directive gets ignored.
Which brings us to the final piece of the foundation, the container for all of this, the source. The eternal dimension.
This isn't another tier inside of us. This is everything else.
Exactly. It's the foundation of existence itself. It's outside of time, space, and matter. It's the power, the knowledge, the presence that makes the other three dimensions possible. It's the context in which the entire game is played.
And the goal isn't to become the source or control it.
No. The goal is to recognize you exist within it and to align your personal structure, your soul, mind, and body with its original design. That's the whole point.
Okay. Wow, that is a heavy but really clear foundation. So once we understand that internal architecture, where do we go? We know our parts, but what's the mission?
Well, that's the next part of the blueprint, the 2-2. It defines your orientation. Once the CEO is back in charge, it needs to know where to steer the ship.
And the blueprint is very, very clear on this. It says there are only two possible destinations.
Only two. Life and death.
That sounds incredibly stark. I mean, people are striving for happiness or success or peace. Why boil it all down to just life and death?
Because the sources define those terms very broadly. Life isn't just about, you know, not dying. It's about alignment, harmony, purpose, growth, living in accordance with that original design.
So it's about vitality, thriving.
Exactly. And death, on the other hand, isn't just physical death. It's misalignment, stagnation, suffering, meaninglessness. It's a movement away from the source, separation.
So a choice that brings me temporary pleasure but takes me out of alignment? Like, say, a destructive habit.
Mm.
That's a step toward death in this model.
That's precisely it. It might feel good to the body or seem logical to the programmed mind in the short term, but it's a net loss for the soul. It's a step in the wrong direction.
Okay, so those are the two destinations. What are the forces pushing us toward them? That's the other two in the 2-2, right?
Right, the two influential forces. And they are just as simple and profound. Good and evil. or bad, if you prefer.
And these forces are constantly at play, beckoning us toward one of the two goals.
They are. The influence of good pulls you toward life. The influence of evil pulls you toward death. This is where the soul's primary job discernment becomes absolutely critical.
The soul has to be the one to tell the difference.
It's the antenna. It's designed to sense these influences and guide the mind to make choices that align with good and lead to life.
So let's put it all together, that nutshell summary they provide.
It becomes the ultimate mission statement, existing within the source of life.
Right, that's context.
Align your body, mind, and soul in the direction of life by the influence of good.
That's it. That's the entire game.
Yeah.
It takes all the ambiguity out of how to live a good life and turns it into a clear operational directive.
It does, but of course, knowing the mission and being able to execute it are two very different things, especially when you're starting with a system full of faulty 7-year-old programming.
Which means you have to start the renovation. This is where we get into the process of change, the 3 phases of restoration.
Exactly. This is the practical, hands-on part. You know the goal, now here's how you rebuild your internal house to get there.
And the analogy to construction is really explicit here. Phase one is just demolition.
It is. And the instruction is simple. Tear down the old.
That sounds violent and painful. What are we actually tearing down?
The old structures of belief, those subconscious paradigms, the lies you've accepted about who you are. I'm not good enough. I always fail under pressure. I need other people's approval to feel worthy.
So these aren't just ideas. They're like the load-bearing walls of your old personality.
They are. And that's why demolition is so hard. You're tearing down things that, even if they were dysfunctional, felt familiar. They felt like you. It's an act of intentional destabilization.
You have to be willing to live in the rubble for a little while.
You do. Because you can't build a new, true structure on top of a foundation of lies. The rot will just spread. Demolition is about facing the truth no matter how uncomfortable.
Okay, so you've cleared the site. The old broken down house is gone. What's next? Phase two.
Foundation. Prepare a solid place to rebuild. This isn't about construction yet. It's about groundwork. It's about creating the mental and emotional space for something new to grow.
So what does that look like in practice?
It means consciously accepting the principles we've already talked about. Truly accepting the soul's authority, committing to the mission. It's about stabilizing the ground by choosing truth and awareness as your new bedrock.
So before you even pick up a hammer, you're making sure the ground you're building on is solid.
You have to.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the new house will just sink. Once that foundation is poured and cured, then you can begin phase three, the rebuild.
And this is the actual construction. The sources break this down even further into 3 stages.
They do. First comes the rough and framing. This is the skeleton of the new self.
What's an example of a frame?
It's a core non-negotiable principle. For example, you decide that from now on, every major decision gets filtered through the soul's discernment before the mind is allowed to react. That's a structural beam. You are framing your new way of being.
I see. So you're building the basic shape of the new you. Once the frame is up, what's next?
The protective exterior shell. You've built the structure, now you have to protect it from the elements.
So boundaries.
Boundaries are a huge part of it. The shell is your proactive defense. If your new frame is about moving toward life, the shell is about keeping out the influences that pull you toward death.
This could mean changing relationships or what media you consume or how you spend your time.
All of the above. It's about protecting the integrity of that near fragile framing while it gains strength.
And the final stage of the rebuild. This one I love. The interior finish that makes the house a home.
Right, because a house with framing and a shell is a shelter, but it's not a home. It's not comfortable. You don't want to live there yet.
So the finish work is about internalization.
It's about practice. It's the process by which those new intentional choices from the framing stage become your new subconscious habits. When responding with patience instead of anger is no longer a conscious, difficult choice, but your new default mode.
When the new way of being feels more natural than the old way.
That's when the house is a home, the new alignment feels like you. That's when the restoration is truly complete.
So it's a full process. Tear down, prepare the ground, and then build in stages until it's livable. Okay, so now we have a brand new, fully restored house. The job's not over, is it?
Not at all. Now comes the lifelong work of maintenance and, you know, continuous improvement. That's what the next section is all about. The 7 R's of stability. The R7.
This is the daily practice, the active engagement required to keep the house in good repair. Let's walk through them. R1 is realize.
To become conscious of something, to understand and accept it, this is all about self-awareness. It's that moment in the day when you catch yourself.
You catch the old programming trying to run a play.
Exactly. You feel that old flash of anger or fear or insecurity, and you stop and you realize, wait a minute, that's the old software. That's not me. It's the first and most critical step.
Without that realization, you're just a slave to the program. Okay, so after you realize, you move to R2. Rationalize.
This is the act of mental work. It's about interpreting a situation from a logical, aligned perspective instead of just reacting emotionally.
So you realize you're feeling that old anger. Rationalize would be the process of saying, okay, that person's comment was not a threat. My anger is a disproportionate programmed response. The logical, intentional response is to what?
To remain calm, to seek understanding, to respond with clarity. You are intentionally building a new logical pathway in the mind to replace the old irrational emotional one. You're making your actions consistent with your new truth.
But hold on a second. Aren't some emotions rational? Like, what about righteous anger at injustice or necessary grief? Is this our telling us to just suppress everything?
That is such an important distinction to make. No, it's not about suppression. The key difference, as the sources lay it out, is purpose and alignment. An emotion that serves the purpose of processing or spurs you to aligned action, that's healthy. It's in the direction of life.
Like grief helps you heal.
Right. But a reactionary emotion is one that's just a repetitive, destructive loop. It doesn't solve anything. It just pulls you back into misalignment and suffering. Rationalize is about choosing the response that leads to resolution, not just repetition.
That makes sense. Okay, so that leads to R3. Reconcile. This sounds like the hardest one. Sever past lies, accept future truths.
This is the deep work. It's where you actively confront those foundational lies you uncovered during demolition. You have to consciously make peace with the fact that what you thought was true about yourself or the world was actually false.
And these lies often feel like they were protecting us.
Right.
They do. If I never trust anyone, I'll never get hurt. That's a lie that feels like a shield. Reconcile is the act of putting down that shield and accepting the new, more vulnerable, but more aligned truth. Meaningful connection requires trust, and that is a risk worth taking.
It takes real courage. You're choosing the truth that leads to life, even if the lie feels safer.
It's a constant conscious choice. Next, R4, recognize, to accept the validity of something.
And this something here is very specific in the sources. You have to recognize that life is a gift.
This is about gratitude. It's the antidote to entitlement and victimhood. If you fundamentally see your existence as a gift, then challenges become opportunities for growth, not personal attacks. It fuels the entire process.
Without it, you just feel bitter about all the hard work. R5, resolve, to make a firm decision.
This is pure commitment. After you've realized, rationalized, reconciled, and recognized, you have to resolve to stay the course. It's the act of making a conscious, unwavering decision that you will not go back to the old way.
It's like signing the contract with your new self.
It is. It's what carries you through when the old programming inevitably tries to creep back in. Which brings us to R6, rectify.
To make something right. In other words, to admit you screwed up.
And to do it without the drama of self-blame. Rectify is just course correction. You resolve to be patient, but you snapped at your kids. Rectification isn't beating yourself up for a week.
It's what?
It's immediately apologizing, taking a breath, and analyzing what went wrong. Oh, I failed to rationalize in that moment. My old stress program took over. Then you immediately get back on course. It's about minimizing the time you spend in misalignment.
I like that. It's an engineering fix, not a moral failure. And that brings us to the last one, R7, repeat.
An act or to do something again. This is the simple, profound truth of the whole thing. This isn't a one-and-done project. Self-mastery is a continuous, cyclical process.
You just keep running through the R's every day, big ways and small ways.
You do. And the sources add one more thing to repeat. You spread the truth in your circle. You teach what you've learned, because reinforcing it for others helps solidify it for yourself.
Okay, so that is the path, the active work. But the blueprint also comes with a big warning label, a map of the places where you can go wrong.
Yes, the 7 destructive landmines of life. These are the common traps that will blow up all your hard work if you're not looking for them.
This is the self-diagnostic checklist. So let's start with landmine number 1, unaware.
Ignorant, oblivious. This is the default state for most people. If you haven't even hit R1, realize, then you're living on this landmine.
And the antidote is simple. It's awareness.
Right. And the sources say this is the absolute most important starting point. They offer a simple, powerful question to trigger it. Could I be wrong?
Just asking that question opens the door. It cracks the foundation of certainty and makes change possible.
If you can't ask that question, the rest of the blueprint is useless to you. But once you are aware, you immediately face landmine number two, denial.
So you see the truth, but you refuse to accept it.
It's an unhealthy rejection of reality. The antidote, naturally, is acceptance, a willingness to believe the truth, especially when it's inconvenient.
And the sources say denial is sneaky. It uses tools to trick you, right?
Very sneaky. It's fueled by things like confirmation bias, where you only look for evidence that supports your old, comfortable lie, or willful ignorance, where you just choose comfort over truth because the truth requires too much work.
So denial isn't a lack of awareness, it's a lack of courage.
In many ways, yes. It's the mind fighting to protect its old, easy programs. And that fight often manifests as landmine three, reactionary.
This is the triggered subconscious autopilot taking over.
Yes. It's the habit in action. The antidote is to be intentional. This requires planning ahead.
So if you know public speaking triggers your anxiety program.
Intentionality means you don't just walk in and hope for the best. You plan. You decide ahead of time how you will breathe, how you will stand, what you will focus on. You install a preferred conscious program to run instead of the old negative automatic one.
You're replacing a reaction with a response. Now, this next one, landmine four. This is where I think things get really controversial for a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
Easily offended.
It's a big one. The sources make a truly radical claim here. They say that after deep study, they could not find a single legitimate reason to be offended by anything.
Okay, I have to push back on that. Seriously. No legitimate reason. We live in a world with real injustice, with prejudice, with hurtful actions. Isn't being offended sometimes a necessary and valid response to that?
It's a critical question. And the way the blueprint seems to handle it is by differentiating between the internal experience of offense and the external action of rectification. It argues that righteous anger, the soul's response to evil, should lead to aligned action, to making things right. But being offended is seen as a self-inflicted wound, a state of internal misalignment.
So how do they justify that? What's the logic?
The logic they present is, well, it's brutally simple. They say, look at any statement or issue that offends you. Is it true?
Okay, let's say it is. Someone calls me lazy, and maybe I have been.
If it's true, then you have no reason to be offended. You should be grateful for the feedback, realize the truth, and then rectify your behavior.
Okay, a little harsh, but I see the logic. What if the statement is false? Someone calls me lazy, and I know I've been working incredibly hard.
If it's false, then it has no connection to your reality. It's just noise. So why would you allow someone else's error to destroy your internal peace? Again, no reason to be offended.
So in this model, the feeling of offense is just the ego's reaction to having its comfortable self-image challenged. It's the mind having a tantrum.
That seems to be the core idea. It's a landmine because it drains your energy into unproductive internal drama instead of focusing it on maintaining alignment. It's a distraction.
That is a very, very different way to look at it. It takes away the power of the offense. Okay, moving to landmine five, unhealthy relationships.
Defined specifically as the insatiable need to be right at all cost, even if it costs you the relationship itself.
We've all seen this. The person who would rather win the argument than preserve the connection.
Right. And the antidote is healthy relationships, which are built on resolution or compromise. The goal is a mutually beneficial outcome, not a personal victory. An aligned person doesn't need to win because their validation comes from within.
And this need to win to control leads right into what the sources call the root of almost everything. Landmine six, unrealistic outer control.
They say this is usually the source of every other issue. The desperate attempt to control things that are fundamentally uncontrollable.
Other people, the future, the economy, the weather.
All of it. It's the mind in overdrive, trying to manage the entire universe because it's terrified. The antidote is the core of self-mastery. Inner self-control.
And they have that great analogy for this one.
The tree analogy, yes. Trying to solve all your external problems is like trying to kill a tree by pulling off every single leaf one by one.
It's exhausting and impossible.
Right, but if you just cut down the tree,
which is your own internal need for outer control,
all the leaves die at once. Master your inner world, and you stop being a victim of the outer world. Most of your problems simply disappear because you realize they were never your problems to solve in the first place.
That is a profound shift. It's about radically refocusing your energy on the only thing you actually can control.
Yourself. Which brings us to the final and equally damaging landmine. Number seven, unforgiveness.
Described as being just as destructive as the need for control.
And they use another really visceral image here. Harboring unforgiveness is like stabbing yourself with the intention of hurting them.
Oof, yeah, the poison is all internal. The other person often has no idea you're even drinking it.
Exactly. So the antidote is, of course, forgiveness. But we have to be really, really clear on what forgiveness is and what it is not, according to this blueprint.
Okay, what is it not?
It is not excusing the other person's behavior. Mm-hmm. It is not forgetting what happened. And it is not releasing them from the natural consequences of their actions.
So what is it then?
It is the act of cutting the energetic chain that connects you to them and to that pain. Unforgiveness keeps you tethered to the past, to the source of the wound.
So forgiveness is a selfish act in the best possible way. You're not doing it for them, you're doing it for you, to free yourself.
It is the ultimate act of inner self-control. You are refusing to allow an external event from the past to continue to disrupt your internal alignment in the present. You sever the connection and you are free.
Wow. We have covered a huge amount of ground, from the basic three-tier structure of our being all the way to these deep psychological landmines.
It really is a complete system. It's an architectural plan for a human life. And the goal is always that holistic alignment.
Let's just restate that core mission one more time, because it really does tie it all together.
Existing within the source of life, align your body, mind, and soul in the direction of life by the influence of good.
And achieving that alignment means the daily conscious work of the seven R's: realize, rationalize, reconcile, and so on.
While simultaneously learning to recognize and avoid the seven landmines, especially those big ones like the need for outer control and unforgiveness.
At the end of the day, it's a blueprint that says you are not broken, you're just running outdated software. And you have the power to rewrite the code.
That's the empowering message at the heart of it all. Self-mastery isn't about becoming someone else. It's about becoming who you were designed to be in the first place.
So we want to leave you with a final thought, a question to really bring this home. If we accept this core idea that so much of who we think we are is just unconscious programming installed before we were seven,
then the very first steps of change are always the most challenging. So we want you to think about one specific, comfortable, but self-limiting belief you hold about yourself. A lie you know you need to deal with.
Now think about the start of that R7 path. Which of those first three R's is the biggest roadblock for you when it comes to challenging that specific belief?
Is it R1? Realize. Is the hardest part just admitting to yourself that this core belief is actually wrong? Is it the sheer resistance to that initial painful self-awareness?
Or is it R2? Rationalize. Can you see the belief is wrong, but you struggle with the hard mental work of building a new logical response? Does your emotional programmed mind just shout down any attempts at logic?
Or maybe it's R3, reconcile. Is the true challenge the final terrifying act of actually cutting the cord, severing your identity from that old lie and accepting the vulnerability of the new truth?
Realize, rationalize, or reconcile. Your primary point of resistance, that point of friction, that is the first lock you need to pick on your own personal roadmap to awakening. Find that friction point. That's where your work begins. Mm-hmm.